the OTB Podcast Network.
I'm glad to say Sam Lee of The Athletic is with us. Sam, it's a big, big day for Manchester City, and we'll talk about the game itself in a moment, but I just wanted your perspective on what happened at Old Trafford and the likelihood of a contagion. Are Man City fans looking at that in any way thinking, actually, you know what, we should be part of this? Or are they thinking, well, I'm really glad that we've got the owners we've got?
Yes, the latter for sure. They definitely are thinking City fans should be part of this. Is anyone pretending it's part of any particular movement? It's not so much a Super League thing. It's just the Super League seems to be the straw that broke the camel's back again, or the second camel hump, I guess. Because obviously United fans protested against the Glazers more than 10 years ago, and when things were going pretty well for them on the pitch. And I just think, yeah, the way the owners treated the club, the way all the owners treated the clubs of the top six clubs, has spurred United fans to act again. So no, the City fans, they don't see anything to join in on, and they wouldn't do anyway. Like, had that protest never happened, City would happy to carry on as normal, because their owners, to excuse the pun, I suppose figuratively and literally, have got much more credit in the bank than any of the other owners at the big six clubs. So no, there's no desire like that at City at all.
And so there's no sense amongst the City fans that there needs to be a change in how football is governed. That conversation that's happening in parallel at the moment, where there is some talk of a change in legislation, there is certainly an increased militancy from the other Premier League teams and the Premier League as an organisation itself to try and prevent any clubs from breaking away again. City fans are kind of nonplussed or almost unengaged by that, I suspect.
Well, I mean, there's a minority, and there were banners at Wembley for the League Cup final last week against the board and the owners, but they are in a minority now, I would say. I think once they pulled out of the Super League, a lot of the people who were unhappy in the first place were happy just to forgive and forget and move on. The supporters groups, the main group, 1894, they came out very strongly straight away and said they're not working with the club until they pull out, basically. And since then, you know, they are focusing on the UK government's review into football, and they're trying to push that and make things better for fans. But even the 50+1 model, how would that work at City? Unless it's Sheikh Mansour and the owners carried on providing all the money and running the CFG as they had been before, all the clubs across the world, you know, there's no body of City fans in the world that could put up 51% of that. The focus really is on the UK government review, making football more accessible for fans. And I think ideally as well, they would like somebody in Soriano's place at City. Ferran Soriano is the CEO. I think this group would in particular like somebody to come in and replace him. But just be more open to fans' concerns, I think. But I think, you know, they know that's very unlikely to happen. And speaking more widely for the fan base, there's no real appetite for it now. And like, if it wasn't for these United protests, we wouldn't even be talking about it as, oh, what are you doing? Like, it's completely swept under the rug now.
It's true. I guess that in one way, what City have done over ever since the takeover has been at odds with what Manchester United have done since their takeover in 2005, that they almost look across at Manchester and look at the stadium, the investment in the local community, the academy, and it almost paints a picture of how bad a PR move this all was from the Glazers to not invest a little bit more in the stadium, to not just pay a little bit, to, I guess, quench a little bit of this feeling of distaste around the club.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what United fans would say about that is it just goes to show that they're not bothered, because, like you say, a little, and look, it might be more than a little, but in terms of when they've got that many millions of pounds and the millions of pounds they've taken out of the club, if they were to reinvest that in those areas you mentioned, it would be a little, would go a long way. They would be more popular owners, I think. And look, to be honest, they've spent an awful lot on player transfers over the years, but that's money that's generally been wasted by either bringing in the wrong players or getting them to work with the wrong coach or possibly both. The wages spending has been huge as well. So it's not like there's been no investment. But I think when you see the end of the financial year, when the results come out and the owners have taken out this amount in millions of pounds from the club, and you see City putting money in, and the weird vilification of putting money in via FFP, it's no wonder the United fans think, well, we should still be at the top if we had proper owners. And yeah, like you say, if they did do that, it would buy them a bit better PR. But I suppose it goes to show that the only interest really for the owners is taking some money out and keeping United at like a relative level of success, but nothing like what the fans are used to. You know, if they make the top four, they seem to be happy. And I think that's what fans are most annoyed about.
It's really interesting, Sam, to have watched these two diametrically opposed methods of club ownership evolve across the city over the last decade or so. From your own perspective and with that kind of unique proximity to these two things, what do you think the future of English football is? Like, my concern is that this is all going to disappear over the summer. Big transfers will arrive because there's an opportunity for the clubs to sign some players that are knocked down rate because of COVID. And the TV deals have been done now for the domestic Premier League deal have been done, which guarantees a fixed amount of income and whatever about their losses over the last while over COVID. The Crucible was full last night. Fans will be back in stadiums next year. The merry-go-round will continue and the game will roll on, and not much will happen in terms of change.
I wouldn't be too surprised, no, if that were the case. Obviously, the talk now is the Premier League will bring in this charter where, you know, club owners or boards have to sign it, and if they break it, there'll be strict punishments. But there's a similar thing already. I think the biggest indication that not too much will change, there might be individual change, individual clubs, but we saw with the Super League, like fans, the best thing about it was fans at different clubs just united immediately against their own clubs and were kind of supporting each other's clubs and fans. You know, so when James Milner spoke out against the Super League on that Monday night, you know, City fans were happy with that. And, you know, City fans don't particularly like James Milner after he left City. And everyone was happy to unite against it. But like I say, now the Super League's not happening. It's kind of broken up a bit. And you've obviously got the fans whose owners are less popular protesting the most. So we saw the protests at Arsenal because they wanted the Cronkies out. And it's easy to understand why if you look at their kind of lack of success on the pitch. United's to another degree at the weekend. City's not, you know, there's no real appetite for that. Chelsea's as well. Chelsea haven't really got any appetite, well, no appetite to get rid of Abramovich, the same at City. So it's all become very fragmented. Spurs, there's been a bit, but no major stuff. So it's all fragmented now. And that kind of groundswell of fans pulling in the same direction just dissipated overnight, really. So you will still have, you know, United. If United don't finish in the top, I don't know, what would it be now? Two next season? Three? Maybe four if they have a bad year. Then they will protest against the Glazers again. Arsenal will probably protest against the Cronkies again if they, I don't know, if they finish 10th next season. Who knows? But it will be more individual. I don't think there's any kind of, any one movement pushing towards the same thing. I suppose the fan support for the UK government review is probably the one way where that could all be united and things could change. But I mean, I don't think any football fans in the UK have really got much faith in the government to lead any kind of review into anything. So it would be a bit optimistic to expect that to happen. But no, and the crazy thing about this, and sorry for going on, but when the Super League was going on, and even now when we're talking about these charters and stuff, everyone's fighting to protect the model we've got already, which we enjoy, but it's not perfect. And now, like with these reforms, you need to sign this and sign up to that. It's, and the UEFA Champions League reform seems to be going ahead. Or there's been a bit of backlash against that, but not enough. It seems like that real energy that we had in the first 48 hours after the Super League was announced, that's gone. The Champions League reforms will probably carry on. The Premier League will carry on as it is, which I don't know. I don't know if people like the Premier League or not in terms of how it's difficult to break into the top few positions. Everyone seems to be fighting for what we've got already when, you know, there's probably reforms that need to be changed that go beyond that, but probably won't be.
Yeah, suddenly the status quo is like, oh, we need to protect this, and actually, do we really? It's a very good point, Sam. Let's talk about the football tonight, because that's why we all fell in love with football in the first place. The quality of match that we saw in the first leg. There are some doubts about Kylian Mbappe's fitness. Pep Guardiola's not buying it. Do you expect Mbappe to start and to see if he's fit? Because let's face it, if you're Paris Saint-Germain, what have you got to lose?
This is such a weird one, because like when Guardiola says he'll play, he said that about Marquinhos last week, and I would imagine what he was getting at there was, look, he's a top player. Players can play through certain injuries, whether it takes injections or whatever. He's not going to want to miss this, so he'll be there. And I get that. But obviously there was the video of Mbappe limping in, and you think if he does play, having kind of limped off the plane yesterday or whatever it was, like, is that just the most pathetic game of well, brinksmanship or whatever, just to try and fool City into preparing for something else. Like, it's such a strange thing to do. So I'd like to think that he wouldn't bother doing that, and PSG wouldn't bother doing that. But I mean, who knows? Let's just say he'll probably start. Let's say he'll probably start, and we'll have the game we expected. And you know, City's task then will to keep Neymar and Mbappe quiet, like they did in the second 45 minutes last week. And they've got it's a huge opportunity for them to get to the final. They've grown so much in the Champions League, and because it's all condensed, it's only been in about the last month that we've learned so much about them in terms of those two Dortmund games and the second half of PSG. They've come so far.
Yeah, that does seem to be like the big journey from last year, because I wasn't sure before the first leg about that Pep Guardiola press conference, the 50 minutes, the references to Cruyff and how these moments should be embraced. I wasn't sure if Pep Guardiola had actually tapped into that. But I think the mentality of the players and the way they brought that tie back around within the 90 minutes probably show that actually they are starting to buy into this. Mentally, they're in a much stronger place than they were last season.
Yeah, and that's the really interesting thing about City. And the way that they've kind of stayed solid in these games, and they've not panicked too much when they've conceded. You know, Guardiola's been trying to put that in for years. You know, the roots of that incredible Tottenham game, you know, that second leg when they went out with the VAR goal disallowed and the Llorente handball and all that. That the seeds of that were in the first leg, because Guardiola had seen, you know, they managed to come behind from 2-1 down to beat Schalke late, but they should never have been in that position against Schalke. And Guardiola had seen that. He'd seen earlier in the season against Hoffenheim, they'd lost to Lyon and drew with Lyon in the group stages. Liverpool was the season before that. So he wanted to keep things tight in that first game against Spurs. I think last season, because Guardiola's talking now and he's saying, we can't forget who we are, we need to play our way, and he's talking about learning lessons. And I think that's probably him acknowledging that he went too far the other way when they played Lyon last year. Yes, they're right to be worried about their counter-attack, but not to the extent of going three at the back, two holding midfielders, making the game really tight and stodgy. The other part of that is the way they found of playing this season from December onwards is to stay tight and compact, but keep the ball and still play like a Guardiola team would. And that's been the evolution. So when it comes back to the Dortmund games, and particularly the last game in Paris, they've managed to have this control that Guardiola's been craving for 2 years. And you say you weren't sure about whether he actually bought into, you know, enjoying this stage. I think it's obvious with Guardiola if he's not enjoying something. If he's nervous, if he's worried about the game, if he's worried about whatever, it's written all over his face. So last week when he was actually relaxed, I thought, when he was saying how relaxed he is and how you've got to enjoy it, I completely bought it, because there's so many times when you just see him and you think, oh God, what's going on behind the scenes here? Because he's not happy. He doesn't cover it up very well. So yeah, he does seem to be embracing it. And the message yesterday in the latest press conference was to tell the players, go out and do what you can do. You know, PSG are a good team. He said they've not even focused too much on PSG. He said it's focused on what they have to do, which is exactly the message. So if we're talking about learning lessons and, you know, not overthinking it and all this old stuff, that is the journey they've been on. And yeah, they're very close to a Champions League final, but it's going to be a tough game, obviously.
The great teams reach Champions League finals, and in a one-off game, anything can happen. There can be a red card, there can be weird stuff can happen in a final. But for them to be, to frank their greatness, and obviously they're the best team in England this year, and they've been the best team in England over the last 4 or 5 years, clearly, they kind of need to get to a Champions League final. The whole point of this project is that. And so therefore, I'm just saying that the pressure is at its greatest tonight, where you have that lead and you're defending a lead, while at the same time, you know, it's all of those decisions that went into the team selection for Lyon. They're kind of magnified tonight. So it will be very interesting to see if he can stick to that and they try and go and win the game tonight.
No, I think they will do. I think in that sense, I was asked about this on the podcast we do for The Athletic. And he was like, oh, they're going to have, you know, they've got a lead to hold on to. Are they going to want to defend it? Are they going to try and not lose? But it's with this team, genuinely, like one hand washes the other. They'll want to play on the front foot. And because they've not been overly attacking. They've not tried to blitz teams. So that second leg against Tottenham with the 1-0 deficit from the first game, they came out and tried to blitz it, which is exactly what Guardiola didn't really want. But that was what the circumstances of the game dictated. Whereas now, City, they can play this compact way. They can stay on the front foot. They can keep the ball and defend that way, and they can keep probing for openings when they come, but they're not going to force it, and they don't have to force it. But the way they do that, it means PSG don't have the ball. It means they stay compact and they can guard against counterattacks. So even if they're thinking, oh, we've got a lead here, like sitting back and going forward for them is the same thing. You know, there will be that control of the game. Well, they're set out for it. Maybe they'll lose it somehow. You know, like you said, anything can happen. But what they will do, the approach is going to be exactly the same either way. They'll stay on the front foot. They will try and push for more goals, but they will do it in a controlled way that means that they're not losing that control, and they're not giving PSG too many opportunities to do what they're so good at, as exactly we saw in the second half.
So what has allowed them to do that this year versus other years? Is it a change in personnel? Is it like not playing with an out-and-out striker? Is it what has technically shifted?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is to do with not playing with an out-and-out striker because it's just more midfielders now. You think of even the left-back Zinchenko, when he goes into midfield, that's like another midfielder. Kyle Walker, not exactly like another midfielder, but he doesn't get forward too often. He just hovers back. Obviously, the pace is there, but he's in the middle as well. Diaz and Stones, comfortable on the ball. You've got Rodri, Gundogan, Bernardo Silva, incredibly technical anyway. Foden, incredibly technical. De Bruyne. There's so many men in the middle of the pitch. And I think it's partly personnel, so it's partly the fact that without the striker, tactically, they're more stable. They're all kind of pulling in the same direction in terms of, well, we'll just keep the ball. But also, I know it's kind of intangible, but just the belief and the confidence. You know, City's record when going down or losing at half-time has not been great under Guardiola or any other manager. Their record is awful. But in the last 3 weeks, they went a goal down to Dortmund and came back at 1-2-1. That was when they were down at half-time. They went a goal down to Villa in 30 seconds. They were 2-1 up by half-time. And then even with 10 men, they killed the game in the second half. And same against PSG last week. So they've got more belief now. And Guardiola talks about patience. And he said their problems at the start of the season were when they weren't playing well, they tried to rush. They tried to attack too quickly, play too advanced passes and then or adventurous passes. When they lost the ball, they'd be out of position. There'd be more spaces and the opposition could counter-attack into them. So if you think about how Leicester beat them 5-2, with players like Harvey Barnes and Vardy, and I can't remember if Madison came on, but he certainly scored. Players who can exploit those spaces. Obviously, it doesn't take a genius to work out that PSG could do that even better. But he said they were rushing their passes. They were leaving themselves too open. Now, you know, they're not doing that. They've got the mentality to keep going. Guardiola mentioned recently about how when they beat Everton in the FA Cup, they scored in the 82nd or 83rd minute. And he said, that's fine. You know, football matches are like that. We don't need to rush. We don't need to really push for a goal. So I think the players now are comfortable doing what they're doing tactically, but they're comfortable in terms of their own confidence with sticking to it. And they're not thinking, oh God, we need to force this issue. We need to force this. They will just play the game at their own pace. So I think those two things ensure that's how they've managed to get this control. And look, whatever happens against PSG, that's undeniably been the story of this season. You know, they've not had any shootouts with anyone. They've just ground out win after win after win. And they've not scored as many goals as they normally do either. And Guardiola's perfectly happy with that. He's happy with, if the game's 1-0, then the game's 1-0. They know how to see it out.
On Phil Foden, the kind of general mood around him is just constant excitement without appreciating just how amazing he is at this moment. Yeah. The season he's had, obviously his minutes were managed quite well at the start of the season. How much has he improved even just within this season?
Yeah, well, I mean, you say the minutes managed quite well. I suppose they were, in the sense, if we're looking at the overall, he's not played too much, he's not going to be burnt out. Because if you look at the players who played the most Premier League minutes before the age of 21, there's only Gareth Barry on there who's had a proper long career. And obviously Gareth Barry's a freak. He's played a ridiculous amount of games and minutes. But the others, you know, Michael Owen, Robbie Fowler, Wayne Rooney, Michael Richards, injury problems throughout their career. So there's a bit of a link there between not playing too much. But there was the interesting thing about Foden this season is he's doing all the things now that make City so much more fluid, to the extent that you would think that Foden is, well, he's nailed on, isn't he? We all know now that he's going to play on the left. He's won that spot from Sterling. But he makes City so much more fluid. So when we talk about the false nine system, where everyone keeping the ball, he can inject a bit of pace. He can get the ball with his back to goal, open his body up, swing his leg round, and he can run at them, as we've seen. And he plays the passes that give them energy as well. But he was doing that earlier in the season when Guardiola was looking for control in a different way. And if you remember their performances in September, October, November, they were quite dull to watch. Like, City fans were bored by the performances. And Guardiola was trying to get that control, basically just keeping everyone back, nobody out of their positions. There wasn't too much dynamism ahead of that. And when Foden came in, he was trying to liven things up. But Guardiola was like, no, we don't want that. So Foden missed out games against Liverpool. He missed out games against Man United. And fans wanted him to come on and change the game, and Guardiola didn't bring him on. And there was huge frustration there because City weren't playing well at all. And they were like, Foden's actually, he's brightening us up. You know, he was playing Champions League games and he was scoring goals and he was trying things. But once Guardiola, once that light bulb switched on and he found out, okay, we can control games and still play well, and still play good football, Foden's been perfect for that. And Guardiola's been more than happy to pick him. So in terms of that transition this season, I'm trying to work out whose, you know, inverted commas, fault it would be. You know, was it Foden's fault that he wasn't doing what Guardiola wanted? Was it Guardiola's fault that he was playing too negatively? But whatever happened, it was kind of incompatible earlier in the season. But now, he's absolutely perfect for the system. And I just think it goes to show, people talk about fearlessness in young players, and it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? Because how many young players are scared, really? You see all the best young players, they come through and they're not scared. But Foden's just, it's not phased. When we talk about how he's been used so sparingly, he came into that first team for a Champions League game against Celtic in 2016. He's had 4 years. He would have gone into that dressing room, you know, as a humble lad from Stockport, looking at David Silva, Vincent Kompany, Sergio Aguero, thinking, what the hell is going on? Over those 4 years, he knows he belongs in that company now. He's always had confidence. He's always had supreme technical ability. And over those 4 years, he's been learning with Guardiola. Guardiola, Foden's agents, they've rejected loans elsewhere because they thought, what good is 40 games in a different system when I want to play in this system? I want to learn this. So he's learned all that stuff over the years. His confidence has grown. There's still things need to change in his game, according to Guardiola, which is obvious. He's only 20 years old. And he's got to the stage now where there's no doubt about him playing. You know, last year before the lockdown, he played in a League Cup final and he played against Manchester United. And everyone was like, oh, okay, this is it. He's going to go now. But even this season, he found it difficult to get into some games, but now he's one of the first names on the team sheet and he's guaranteed to play in both legs of a Champions League semi-final. And it just goes to show, again, after a long-winded answer, how far he's come.
Yeah, great answer, Sam. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Thanks, lads. Always a pleasure.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.